Hello, and since when is complicity a crime? Welcome to Best of the Rest, the show where we take a second look at movies that were poorly received upon release and challenge ourselves to only talk about the things we like and what the movie does well. It's Video Game Month 2, and this week we are talking the 2018 film Rampage. My name is Chris Logan, and I am joined, as always, by my increasingly aggressive co-host, Andrew Williams. You ready for this one, Andrew?
Yeah.
Cool. You're getting so aggressive. I thought about saying my co-host that continues to like grow in size, but I didn't want to, you know, that would sound like an insult, so I went with aggressive instead. Figured you wouldn't be insulted by that.
There was a guy at my hockey game yesterday that was like, dude, you look like the chef from Top Chef. I don't watch Top Chef because, you know, I use my time wisely.
Do you, Andrew? Let's go through the things that you watch.
I absolutely don't. I just watch the playoffs right now. That's really all I watch. I don't remember what the guy's name was, but he was a redhead with a beard. What is his name? Here we go. Kevin Gillespie, I guess.
Okay, let me look at him. Top Chef,
Kevin. He clearly weighs like 50 more pounds than I do. I was like, this is like, it kind of hurts my feelings that you're telling me this. Nothing against Kevin. Like, you know, he's clearly really good at his job, but I was like, we don't look exactly alike.
Hey, easy, buddy. Maybe you just like, thought you looked like you cook well or something.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe that's also a roundabout way of calling someone fat, though. So
yeah, dude, know. The desserts you make are so good. It's like, I know, and hey, what the hell?
Andrew, it is Video Game Month yet again. We did this once before, way back when, shortly after changing our format a little bit and not exclusively doing comic book movies, one of our very first themes was Video Game Month. And it was inevitable we would be here again because there are quite a bit of video game adaptations that were poorly received upon release. It's a very rich field. There will probably be a Video Game Month 3 at some point, I gotta imagine. But this is our second venture into this category. We're kicking it off this week with a rather recent film, Rampage. I say recent. God, it's
I was gonna say,
years
like,
old now. To me, 2019 feels like 2 years ago.
I saw this after I moved to Illinois. This is like, it's like April 18. I had moved to Illinois in January that year. So that's a weird thing to think about. Because I remember seeing this in a theater like after I moved here. It's not the first movie I saw when I moved here. I actually remember that one too. Because I saw a movie like the night I moved here. But
what movie was it, Andrew?
It was The Disaster Artist.
Okay.
But
what a story, Andrew.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Mark. But yeah, so I remember like going to the theater to see this and like looking for it in theaters. Like I was just kind of, I literally was just like doing my own thing like every day. Like I didn't really have a whole lot of friends or anything. So I was just kind of like, well, all right, let's go to the movies all the time. So I saw this in theaters. I remember watching it, so I've already answered the question you were about to ask. So
you moved to Chicago, yeah. Then immediately watched a movie about animals destroying Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I figured it's the worst that could happen.
I had never seen this movie before until this week preparing for this podcast. It's one of those that just, I don't know, I had friends in 2018, I guess, so I didn't go see this movie in theaters.
Yep, makes sense.
I had other things to do. It looked fine enough, just didn't really look, you know. It's one of those, you hear about a video game adaptation of Rampage, you go, huh? How does that? Like, it's not quite as weird as, like, you know, a Tetris movie, you know, first hearing about that. But it is one, you know, it's a video game that doesn't have much of a story beyond giant creatures destroying a city, but by golly, they did it, and we're talking about it this week. Of course, diving into the positives and what works. Video Game Month 2, here we go, Andrew. Let's set the stage a little bit. This movie is released April 13th of 2018. 6 years ago. 2018 was 6 years ago.
You don't have to keep saying it.
I'm having a hard time with this. I was like,
I don't want to talk about this.
I was 30. It's crazy. It's got to be the pandemic. Like, literally, when I think 2019, I go, yeah, it was a couple years ago. Endgame came out right before lockdown. Pandemics lasted for 2 years. That's my mental math when I think back on this time frame.
Yeah, the pandemic really did add like a decade to everyone's lives.
Yeah, what a horrible thing that was. I don't know. Whatever. This movie was made on a budget of $120 million. Pretty big budget. Then at the box office, it brings in $428 million. Pretty successful run at the worldwide box office. Critically, it's not well received, but it's not panned either. It holds a 51% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. Even like before I even watched this movie, I'm kind of surprised by that score. This feels like a 35% Rotten Tomatoes score, just based on like the premise and what I know about it, right?
I was a little surprised by that too, to see that it was so like kind of straight down the middle. And it's a weird thing to look at. Now, that I will say this, the audience score is 72% based off of 10,000 plus ratings. So audiences really loved them some Davis Okoye. But which is certainly a name that The Rock so has in specific. This movie. But it's a little interesting because I feel like this is definitely like during, like, we still like The Rock at this point, and I don't want to say that, you know, there's that critics can be biased at all, because, you know, that's definitely a thing that never happens, and it's also, folks, not a bad thing. Everybody has biases. It's actually, your default state is to be biased. There are things you like and things you dislike. The point being that around this time, I think largely The Rock was still seen as very enjoyable and very likable. And so I think that definitely played a factor in reviews of his movies, where people are like, well, hey, it's The Rock. And, you know, you kind of, The Rock's a known quantity. If you know what you like with The Rock, you're going to get more of that here. And so I think that definitely maybe was a factor early on. A lot of people call it the MCU effect, where like there are movies in the first three phases of the MCU that people feel got generally better scores than they quote unquote deserved. And now the opposite, there are movies in the MCU coming out now that people think are getting harsher reviews and scores than they deserve. Like the sheen wears off at a certain point, but even at The Rock's peak, a rotten movie was not uncommon. He was just very notoriously known for, not notoriously necessarily, but like he would love to be like, he would focus on the box office, he would focus on the audience score, he would focus on every single metric that obviously was good.
Any positive metric he could find.
Yes. And then would just ignore that, you know, the Rotten Tomato, the RT score, or whatever, was the critic score was lower. And, you know, you're hyping up your brand, you know, if it's anything, you know, I know that was a new concept for The Rock at the time, just hyping up his brand. And not really something he was too familiar with, but it's definitely what he does. That's a joke, folks.
Let's take a look at the creative team on this movie. We have four credited writers.
Woof.
Let's go through them, Andrew. We have Ryan Ingle. Now, this was his biggest credit so far. Seems to be pretty new to the game. However, an upcoming project of his is a movie called Cowboy Ninja Viking, starring Chris Pratt. Cowboy Ninja Viking, starring Chris Pratt. Doesn't that just sound like AI generated? And I don't even mean that as an insult. It's just like, I just threw a bunch of words out there.
Well, let me talk to you about this, Chris, because you opened this bag of worms. I actually know what Cowboy Ninja Viking is.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cowboy Ninja Viking is a comic published by Image Comics, written by AJ Lieberman and drawn by Riley Rossmo. It is wonderful. It is absolutely fantastic. It is around a counterintelligence unit of dissociative identity disorder patients who are transformed into agents known as the triplets, referring to the three distinct personalities within their minds, one of which is Cowboy Ninja Viking.
One was cowboy, one was ninja, one was Viking. You're saying
no,
one
so there's two others. There's two others beyond the cowboy, ninja, Viking. So there's two rogue triplets, one regular triplet. They're all called triplets. So anyway, it's a comic that is very, very good, and I like a lot. And Riley Rossmo's art, you may have seen it around other places if you look him up. He's very, very good. Creates a very dynamic, fun style. And he loves channeling different influences for all of the different versions of the character, all the different, not versions, but all the different mindsets of the character as he switches and changes between them. That movie was announced like a long time ago as starring Chris Pratt. So I don't believe it's happening, but it would have been fun, maybe.
How's the casting of Chris Pratt for this character?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's not what I would have done.
Any farther
on
that.
It's not what I would have done.
Next credited writer we have here is Carlton Cuse. Probably most famously a showrunner for Lost. Because of that, ended up on Time's list of 100 most influential people in the world. This has come up a number of times in our podcast now. Anybody like related to Lost, whether like as an actor or writer, or we had someone do it for because they were on that TV show that I can never remember every time I try to reference this on the podcast. The guy from The Happening that plays the army guy, he was on the show with the catchy theme song that everyone likes.
Yep. Starts the song they ripped for Succession.
There it is, Succession.
That's literally, if you listen to Roman Reigns' theme song that everybody loves, it's just a Succession theme song.
Hey, if it works.
I actually am interested to see that Carlton's other film credit is San Andreas, another epic disaster film starring The Rock.
Most of his work is in TV, a creator of Bates Motel, which is a show that on paper sounds awful, but in execution was actually pretty good.
Not bad. I will say this for the Psycho franchise. The Psycho franchise, despite every single like instinct in your body being like, why are we doing this, has more than one shockingly underrated installment beyond the original, which is, you know, just like a slasher horror classic at this point. But like Psycho 2 shouldn't work. Like a legacy sequel to Psycho with like a Norman Bates fresh out of jail. Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? And then you watch it and you're like, oh, all right. Okay. All right. You know, I guess this is what we're doing. And then, you know, Psycho 3 and 4 are a little bit more of a mixed bag. Psycho 3 is not bad. But then like Bates Motel, I was like, man, a whole show about like young Norman. I was like, oh, come on. I was like, what are we? And then I watched it and I'm like, geez, why? How? Like, how did you do this? Like,
ironically enough, possibly one of the low points of the franchise is the remake of the original, where they try to stay extremely close to the spirit of the
shot
original.
Shot for shot.
And it doesn't
it's
work.
Shot for shot. It doesn't work at all.
All these weird swings they take in that universe seem to find their audience.
Yeah, like it's that. That's who did that? Was that Gus Van Sant did that?
Yes.
Yeah, and man, what a weird thing. Like Gus Van Sant literally was like, I want to do a shot for shot remake of Psycho, and everyone was kind of like, why? Like, what do you? Okay, I guess you just made Good Will Hunting, which won a bunch of Academy Awards, so you can kind of do whatever you want. But like, it's one of those things that I would have expected Steven Soderbergh to do in like his spare time, like for fun.
on
an iPhone or something. And then like Gus Van Sant's like, nah, I'm just going to make it and you're going to market it and we're going to release it. And some studio literally was like, okay. And yeah, it's a weird one. I would definitely say it's the low point, if only because you're watching it the whole time, like, why? Like, I don't understand what, and you know, maybe Gus Van Sant finished it and was like, oh, that's why you don't do that. I don't know. He might have had that self-awareness. I don't know, but it's a heck of a thing.
Hashtag PP. Moving on to our third writer, Ryan Condal, a writer on the film Hercules, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, also a showrunner for House of Dragons.
House of the Dragon.
Did I say it wrong? House of the
Dragon?
You
said House of Dragons. It's House of the Dragon, not House of Dragons.
Is it the Game of Thrones show, or am I mixing it up with
House of the Dragon is what it's called.
It's called House of the Dragon?
Yes.
That's a dumb name. I don't know.
Yeah, House of Dragons is so much better.
It is. I think it's way cooler.
It's the same.
House of the Dragon is one dragon. House of Dragons is a dragon, a bunch of dragons in a house.
Unless it's the it's dragon in the royal sense. It's like House of the Dragon. Like, this is the House of the Dragon as a concept. Maybe there's tons of dragons in the House of the Dragon, man.
I think House of Dragon sounds cooler, but...
I don't know. Just... I haven't watched any of this. I don't know.
Our last credited writer here is Adam Stakiel. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Interesting credits here. We have things like Maid of Honor, rom-com, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which is an adaptation of a children's book. And then after this goes on to do Black Adam. So this seems to be his introduction to the rock world, and he's still cricking around in there as far as we know.
Yeah, seems so. I can only assume that a lot of these people didn't work together on this. I would assume somebody like Adam, because like you look at like Carlton and Condal and Ryan Ingle, and like they're definitely like Carlton and Ryan Condal at this point are very much like rock people. They're in his orbit. You know, they've worked with him in the past. They've kind of established a rapport with him. Ryan Ingle, a little bit different. Obviously he did Rampage, but before that he'd done a couple of Liam Neeson action thrillers. Some of the more underrated ones after Taken, Nonstop, and The Commuter. Then he did Beast, starring Idris Elba, where he fights a lion. That's pretty cool, I'm not gonna lie. The movie's pretty great if you like watching Idris Elba fighting a lion. So Ryan and Adam, I feel like, are definitely people brought in maybe before The Rock comes on board. They do earlier drafts of the script, or they might have worked on it together, I don't know. And then, obviously, once The Rock comes on board, he brings in his people to kind of punch up the script and make it starring him.
And the film is directed by Brad Peyton. Brad made his directorial debut with a little movie called Cats and Dogs 2, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. We all remember that one, right? Andrew, look, hashtag PP. The Revenge of Kitty Galore. We all see what they're doing there. But
kids won't.
But that's pretty weak, right? You're just taking a cat word and replacing it with another cat word.
It's like you're purposely taking the adult-themed joke and making it for kids, and in the
you're
process
reducing
turning
it to
into
a,
nothing.
To a like, single entendre versus a double entendre.
Yeah, like, it's. But in order to understand the joke, you have to have seen the James Bond movie in question. Like, you have to know that reference, and so it's a choice,
He also directed Journey 2 and San Andreas. So, again, in The Rock's orbit, no doubt why he returned here for Rampage.
Yeah, if you look at The Rock's filmography there for a while, it was very common that kind of once you entered the circle, you kind of stayed there. It was pretty common that The Rock found the people, you know, he was very particular about the kind of people he wanted to work with, and basically would just keep bringing those people back as long as he, as long as everything was all copacetic. And yeah, certainly seems it was.
It's a movie star thing. Tom Cruise has his guys. Ben Affleck has his dialogue guy that he brings on to every movie. Like, you got the power.
It's
more
true.
Power to you, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Brad Peyton never needs to worry about money again, thanks to The Rock. So good for him.
Well, Andrew, I think it's time that we jump into this film, talk about everything we like, everything that works, all the positives in Rampage. You ready to do this?
Yeah.
After a space station is destroyed by an escaped subject on board, the debris containing a chemical weapon crash lands across the U.S. The toxin, which rapidly changes the target's DNA, finds its way into a gorilla, a wolf, and a crocodile. Once these creatures begin growing larger and increasingly more violent, the U.S. government steps in to try and take them out. They are assisted by Davis Okoye, a primatologist that has cared for George, the now mutated gorilla, and Kate Caldwell, a former employee of the company that created the weapon. Once all the mutated creatures go on a tear through the city of Chicago, our heroes make one last stand. There you go, Andrew. That's how you make a movie out of the video game Rampage about giant animals destroying a city. It's a chemical that makes animals large and aggressive, and they go and destroy the city. Simple enough. I don't know why we ever doubted the premise.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time, really.
I gotta admit, the one thing I do know about Rampage, you know, just playing it growing up, is that when you die, when you lose, your character shrinks back down into a human, and like they run off the screen. So it's very clear these are mutated humans in the video game. And I gotta be honest, the first time like I saw the poster with The Rock and like behind him is a giant albino gorilla. Yeah, I was like, oh, and it says like big meets bigger, you know, talking about The Rock and this monkey. I was like, oh, is The Rock going to turn into, once you see some trailers, it kind of becomes obvious that like that's not really where they're going here. But Andrew, maybe they should have. Well, Andrew, we're going to dive into the movie they did do, the decisions they did make, the scenes they did give us. But first, we're going to talk about this cast, starting with a high point, best casting and best performance of the film. Because every episode we recognize one person who goes so far above and beyond the call of duty that they actually elevate the quality of the entire film with their performance. We recognize that person by giving them the Mark Strong Award. Andrew, I'm going to say you're going to kick us off, but we can probably say this in unison. Who is getting the Mark Strong Award for this movie? It is clearly Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Absolutely, 100%.
Absolutely zero question.
With a bullet. Now a multi-time Mark Strong Award winner. He picked one up back on Watchmen for his turn as the comedian. This one, I am pretty positive. I think you and friend of the show, Bob Buell, both went with Jeffrey Dean Morgan for that one. And also alum of the show.
Fortunately, there's no way to check.
There's no way to check for sure, but this one I'm mildly positive about. I think he also pops up briefly in Jonah Hex. Is that Jeffrey Dean Morgan who has he's like in the grave?
He is. He comes back to life briefly. Obviously, he's briefly in Batman v Superman as well. He's shown up on this show quite a bit. I was looking back at his. We've got obviously Watchmen. We've got Batman v Superman. We do have. Jonah Hex. We have the Losers, obviously, the biggest.
Oh, right. He might have got one there. This could be his third Mark Strong Award. Who knows? No way to check.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's odd. His Wikipedia says he's in Jonah Hex, but it's not in his filmography. That must be what uncredited means.
Does his Wikipedia say how many Mark Strong Awards he has? Because that would solve
unfortunately
this
not. Unfortunately, it does not, which means someone it's should total fix that. Waste. Many times on the show, like I said, this man might be a three or a four time Mark Strong Award winner now, for all I know. But he's great. And #PP. This is a movie based off a video game, or like there's no humans outside the monsters in the video game, near as my memory suggests. You are monsters just trying to destroy stuff. And the more you destroy, the more points you get. I believe that's
Right? Humans. The army is attacking you, and you.
Yeah, okay. So the army is attacking. So. No, like individual human characters.
No. There's no story in that game. No.
There's no story. So anyway, I would assume you get approached for a movie like this, and you get told, "Hey, we're making a movie based off of Rampage, the video game. We're gonna have the giant monsters fighting each other." And I assume at that point, your brain kind of tells you there's a certain tone that it's going for. I would say this movie largely doesn't actually go for a kind of self-aware tone of what we're looking at. The movie generally plays itself pretty serious.
I agree.
I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying that you kind of expected a movie like this to be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek. Jeffrey Dean Morgan is the one character who seems to get that. He is, I I won't go quite as far as to say he's in a different movie than everybody else is. It's not quite to that level. It's not a Matt Smith and Morbius type thing where Matt Smith is like, oh, it's a Monty Python sketch. And everyone's like, no, it's a serious drama about a brooding man with vampire powers. He's got this ridiculous Southern accent. He does. He's wearing one of the, he's dressed in this black suit when you first see him, but then like he almost immediately like pulls his jacket out and he's got a gaudy, ridiculous belt buckle with his gun on full display. Like he's hamming it up. He's leaning into it. He's having a blast, saying weird, like, you know, anachronistic sayings from his grandpa about, you know, all this nonsense, but everything you would kind of expect a character like this to act like. So he's making the most out of every single sequence he's on screen. The movie is more interesting when he is on screen. So for that reason, like you said, with a bullet, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Mark Strong Award winner. Again,
1000% makes the movie more interesting. I mean, this character, he's the man in black, right? He's the secret government agent. We don't even know exactly what agency he works for. He just works for the government. And this could be deadly serious. It could, you know, as serious as everyone else. But instead, they make him a cowboy. Like, they refer to him as cowboy. You mentioned the belt buckle and the big gun he has on his holster. And it's such a weird choice, but it works so well. And it's just so fun. And he's antagonistic with The Rock at first, but they quickly, like, become, you know, realize they're on the same side. And he gets to, you know, join us for the rest of this movie. And it just, he looks like he's having a blast every time you see him in a scene. And that makes me have fun in the audience, you know, like seeing him have a good time. As I'm watching this movie called Rampage, based on a video game about giant monsters destroying buildings, I want to see some people have some fun and make some weird choices. And he does all of that.
Yep.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan is so criminally underused because he's wonderful in everything that he's in. And I mean, he's had a great career. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like he should have like his own franchise or vehicle. Like, I feel like he's capable of doing so much more, but he makes the most of every role that he is given. And I'm sure I've said this on mic once before, but we need a movie with Jeffrey Dean Morgan and John Hamm, and they play brothers. And that's as far as my pitch ever goes, but I want to see those two on screen together. They have such similar energy. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
If you were about to say similar looks, I was going to lose my mind. I was about to lose it. No, we're not doing it.
When he walked on screen, I was like, I had no idea John Hamm was in this movie. And then I finished the scene. I was like, oh, wait, look at that gruff. It's a little, he's got gray in the beard. That's Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Can't stand you. Underrated, underutilized. That seems a little bit of a misnomer now. Like, he's got The Walking Dead to his credit now, and like that, you know, for the dips in quality that it has, that was a huge thing.
Sure.
So like he's clearly got like massive roles to his name. Obviously he's well loved by Supernatural fans for his brief but memorable run as Elder Winchester, their father, through the first couple seasons of the show, and then including a couple of high profile returns. He still is on The Walking Dead. I think he does The Walking Dead, Dead City. That's a show that's just him and Maggie, apparently. It's apparently the Maggie and Negan show.
Him and Maggie?
Yeah.
Man, I didn't watch the show that long, but I read the books a while, and that just, I gotta look into this. Okay.
I would say The Walking Dead's been off book for a long time.
But in both characters, those characters are from the books, right, though.
Right, of course, yeah. She like needs to go find her kidnapped son, and like, I don't remember the exact pitch, but basically, like, Negan's the person where they're like, she's like, all right, I need your help, and it's not like full on, look where that brought you, back to me type thing, but it's pretty close. Basically, she needs his particular set of skills, I guess. But and then I know there's that new Walking Dead show that's just Rick and Michonne again, finally, but I don't know. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I would say he's definitely gotten some flowers from the community for everything he's done now. But I do agree that, like, you know, like, there's there's another step that he can still take, and I would like to see him take it. I think there, you know, to take it like you said, not to go to like having that one like big thing that's his. That's like, you know, rather than being the part of the bigger thing that he's very well liked for, give me the Jeffrey Dean Morgan thing. Give me the thing that's his. Okay, oddly, the closest thing for that might be Watchmen. So
I'm going to change my pitch a little bit. It's still Jeffrey Dean Morgan and John Hamm. They don't need to be brothers, but they're co-leads in a Shane Black film.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just do it. Just come on.
Do it. Take all my money. It's not enough to make a movie, but take it anyway. It's a start.
I got like $20. I just had to have my chimney fixed, so I don't have a lot. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. Give me Shane Black. Yeah, Shane Black's due for like a make me the thematic third installment to the trilogy that's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys.
Yeah. What do we call this?
I don't know.
The pair of detectives, two detectives trilogy.
Well, it's like one's a detective and one's not. So like
PIs, they're all PIs. They're all dicks.
Well,
the dicks trilogy.
Cause Kilmer and Gosling are the dicks. Like RDJ is just a criminal and Russell Crowe's kind of a low life. So it's like, it's a PI and a low life.
Okay.
And that just doesn't roll off the tongue. So
a low life and a PI, a dick and a dick.
Walk into a bar, a dick and a dick. All right. Two dicks. Okay. That works. Two dicks. There we go. Just yeah, it's got layers because one's a dick, a cop, one's a dick. Because he's just, all right, I get it. All right, I'm willing to roll with it. We need the conclusion of the two dicks trilogy.
All right, make it happen.
If there's not two dicks on my screen, I don't want it.
I can't wait to cut that and make it my text tone. Let's take a look at the rest of this cast, Andrew.
Gotta keep that one for yourself, huh?
Other than Jeffrey Dean Morgan. The Rock is in this movie. Did you notice this, Andrew? Do you know The Rock's in Rampage?
I did see that.
You talked a little bit about where this falls in our public perception of The Rock, which is now at the time of this recording.
It's an odd place. It's in a very odd place.
We'll get into that.
That's the nicest way of putting that.
A bit, but looking back in 2018, I've kind of just gone through his filmography here. This is like maybe the peak. I mean, this is coming off of 2017 had Baywatch, which was a flop, but also had Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which I love as
it's a great movie. Fantastic.
Very good. And such a good use of The Rock. Because we started to get kind of like, oh, he's kind of playing the same-ish character all the time. But that subverts his character in such a fun way by making him like a little kid inside The Rock's body. Great. Genius choice. I love it. The next year has Rampage. This movie makes a lot of money. People seem to still be on board. But this is also when I start seeing memes of like four screen grabs of The Rock wearing a tight tan shirt in a jungle. And they're like, these are from four different movies. And you can't tell. He's got the bald look, no facial hair thing going. Also this year, Skyscraper comes out, which was also a flop. Didn't make a lot of money and not well received.
Have you seen Skyscraper, man?
I have not, Andrew. I did not see it.
It's great. It's like Die Hard in a skyscraper.
It's so good. I mean, there's so many Die Hard NAs, like even like the Die Hard franchise.
It just came full circle. Like it just like we're just the ripoff of Die Hard is now just in on skyscraper.
Some producer just rips a line of coke. Like, I got it. Die Hard, put him in a tall building. But sir, didn't we already? Taller! Skyscraper!
Make it taller.
His character's name in that movie is Will Sawyer. I don't know what it is. Every fake name for The Rock is hilarious.
None of them seem real. It's so ridiculous.
None of them seem right. And like his actual name doesn't. No one calls him Dwayne Johnson. For a while in his career, he was trying to like distance himself from the wrestling persona and he lost a lot of weight, tried to get more roles, and credit himself just as Dwayne Johnson. And then he realized, wait a minute, I'm The Rock. That's what people want to see me as. And you look at him like, yeah, The Rock makes sense. Rocky Maivia makes sense, oddly, but Dwayne Johnson does not. Neither does Davis Okoye or Will Sawyer.
I'm looking at some of these names.
He's
Raymond
Lucas
Gaines.
Raymond Gaines? Oh,
in San Andreas, he's Raymond Gaines.
They made his name Gaines. That's a little on the nose.
That one's a little bit better for that reason alone.
He's John Matthews in Snitch. I don't know what name you come up with this guy that works. But anyway, we're getting
Luke Hobbs feels here. Like the only name that's like close to sort of fitting. Like
the only because they call him Hobbs. Yeah. Lucas? Well, like, does he look like a point. Lucas?
Like, well, it goes by Luke. Like, it's Luke Hobbs in the movie.
Yeah, but his given name is Lucas.
But even still, Hobbs. Like, you at least gave you have an out within the name to just call him Hobbs. Like, I can't imagine anybody going up to this guy and be like, hey, Okoye, and having it sound natural. Like, it just doesn't work.
Well, Maui. Maui works.
Maui works, but I don't have to look at him when I'm watching Maui.
Not
I
yet.
I just have to listen to him.
Not yet.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Do you know this, Andrew? You know there's two Moana movies in production?
I know.
Moana 2 and live-action Moana, where The Rock is reprising his role as Maui in both of those. They're both greenlit. They're both announced. Disney, what are you doing? Mufasa, you see that's coming? Anyway, we can't go to that rabbit hole. Disney, what are you doing?
Well, it sounds like we're teeing up for another live action month. Live action, quote unquote.
Anyway, yeah, this is probably like peak Rock, but I think after this, the Rock fatigue really starts to set in.
I think Black Adam kind of
blows up.
This is like the crest, because like Jumanji the year before this, I think gives him a little bit of juice going forward, where people were like, oh, like that was the one where it was like, you can use The Rock effectively, or we were kind of reminded of it. The Fast and the Furious movies to that point are still largely enjoyed. They're over the top and insane, but like, it's mostly okay. 2019 is when like Fast and the spinoff with him and Jason Statham comes out, and everyone was largely like, this is fine. And then Jumanji 2 comes out that year, which not as good as the first one they did, but I think still perfectly enjoyable. Then I think like Jungle Cruise into Red Notice into Black Adam into that is where you just start to get the puttering and the people that are kind of like, all right, we're just like, we're not really, I don't want to say not really trying anymore, because that seems really mean, but like, it's where the cookie cutterness of it all kind of felt like it just really drove home, and people were kind of like, okay, maybe something else. And so, you know, went back to wrestling, did an all-time great character run there, which everybody loved.
Now,
and
personally, as of WrestleMania 40 weekend, my enjoyment of The Rock was nearing an all-time high. Because, I'm not going to lie, #PP, I felt The Rock fatigue in his movies, and I want to see him do something a little bit different. And then he comes back to wrestling, and I'm like, all right. He's done this before. It's just, he's got a big persona. He's forever over. He's just going to hop into the main event. And he does, but he does it as a heel. He does it as a bad guy. And he leans so hard into that. He's such a bastard in this run. He's subverting his catchphrases. He's trying to discourage the audience from cheering him. He's actively getting boos. One of the greatest things he did was open the show, walk out, and grab a microphone, and then walk backstage without saying a word. And the crowd hated it. They all booed. That's masterful heel stuff. I loved that run so much. And I was like, wow, he was able to put aside his ego and do what's best for business, to use an old wrestling quote. And it worked and it was great. And I loved it. And then at the time of this recording, like this week, a lot of reports have come out from numerous sources that have worked with The Rock about his behavior behind the scenes. And it seems horrible. I mean, it's not like, we're not talking crimes here, but we're talking like showing up 8 hours late to set regularly. 8 hours late. What is that, Andrew? That's not even late. That's just like, you didn't come in today. Like, it's just bizarre. There's the peeing in the bottle thing. It's just so, so weird.
I mean, you've heard some stories about The Rock kind of being a diva on set. I mean, obviously, we remember the big blow up with Vin Diesel over Fast and the Furious, which was presented as like The Rock trying to be professional and Vin Diesel kind of being the drama queen.
Vin Diesel got all the hate for that, for sure. 100%.
And But then you also hear the stories about how, like, The Rock's contracts, like the jokes about how, like, he said his contracts stipulate he can't lose a fight, stuff like that. Like, stuff where, like, it's one of those things where, like, the more and more you look back at it, you're kind of like, you know, the signs were there that, like, maybe this guy was a little full of himself and maybe just a little weird. And I, you know, there were some other, we don't have to dive into all the details, but there was definitely some stories in there where I was like, what? And apparently some of those have been, like, inadvertently corroborated by previous co-stars, like Kevin Hart, apparently, like, on one of the things, just kind of like, yeah, he does that. I couldn't tell you why he does that, but he does that. It's a very weird thing to kind of look back on. And apparently, like, when they were making Red Notice, which was the Netflix kind of comedy heist movie starring The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot, like, apparently that, like Ryan Reynolds apparently got super upset with The Rock's behavior to the point that it, like, iced their relationship for a few years. They did patch it up. I know The Rock ended up doing a cameo in a Free Guy, but that might have been before. I don't know. But if you manage to, like, make Ryan Reynolds, like, mad, I feel like you're going to, like, a really high level at that point. I feel like he's a relatively easy guy to get along with.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's complicated. Hashtag PP. But by and large, I've enjoyed The Rock's work, and I get the complaints about playing the same character or whatever. But, like, to me, that doesn't really matter. If the movie ends up good, it's good. Whether it's The Rock being The Rock in it or not, you know, whatever. But yeah, this movie falls in an interesting spot in that landscape where it's kind of starts to tilt back the other direction. But let's keep moving through this cast. Andrew, we have Naomi Harris as Kate Caldwell. Alum of the show, Naomi Harris. Multi-alum of the show, I think. She's in, which Daniel Craig movie did we cover here, Andrew? Spectre?
Spectre.
As Miss Moneypenny, as well as Venom 2, as Shriek. Is that the character's name there?
Will become Shriek, yes.
Okay, gotcha. Naomi Harris is a fantastic actor, and I'm going to say what I said about Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We need more roles with her. She's so good in those Bond movies, and to see her play, like, third banana in something like Venom, she's fine in Venom too. I don't want to be too harsh on that, but I think she's capable of so much more than what she's being asked to do here. Like, she's good at what she's asked to do. It's just not much she's being asked to do. Hashtag PP, but I think she's just fantastic.
I agree. I think, even looking back at 28 Days Later, which she's in.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, she's been fantastic for a long time. I would definitely like to see her in more stuff. I mean, Moonlight was a big success as well. A lot of acclaim for that one as well. That next step, something, give me the Naomi Harris vehicle, please.
Maylin Ackerman plays Claire Wyden. Now, she is the CEO of Energine. I think that's how you say that company's name. It's the company that created this chemical weapon. And she's kind of our big bad, if you will. Alum of the show, once again. She was Silk Spectre 2 in Watchmen, so this reunites her with Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And she is just a very cold businesswoman type. She's even got, like, the jacket draped over her shoulders at the end to really complete that look of a boss bee that doesn't take any S. You know what I'm saying, Andrew?
Sure.
She has a pretty cool death, though.
She does have a pretty cool death. It's another one moment in the movie where I was like, all right, we get it. It's a perfectly fine, but, like, it's a very kind of straightforward, no nonsense businesswoman who doesn't really care if, you know, the bottom line is what's most important. The people don't matter. It's a good thing that only happens in movies. It'd be real depressing if it didn't.
The character's brother, Brett, is played by Jake Lacy, and this guy is having a lot of fun. I really like him. He's obviously dumb. He's almost like a dumb henchman, but he's her brother. They seem to be equal partners, but he's just obviously an idiot, And at one point, he's holding a gun to The Rock, and she takes it from him and actually shoots him, and he freaks out that she actually went through with it. A lot of comedy wrung from this character. And I look at this guy's credits, Jake Lacy, and he seems to be doing very well for himself. Lots of high-profile stuff, lots of credits. But to me, he is just plop. He shows up in season 9 of The Office. His character gets the nickname of Plop because he's always taking dumps. And he's pretty funny in that season of The Office. But I will never not see Plop, no matter what he's in. So my apologies to Plop Lacy.
I would also like to shout out a movie he quite recently appeared in called The Kane Mutiny Court Martial. This is a kind of legal drama film, if you will, focused on the mutiny of the, it's based off of an actual work called The Kane Mutiny, which is about a mutiny that took place on a ship in, what year was that? World War II. And, this is basically the actual legal proceedings that happened as a cause of that. Kiefer Sutherland plays kind of our lead character. Jason Clarke is there as one of the defense attorneys, and Jake Lacy plays one of the lieutenants as well. But that was the last movie written and directed by William Friedkin before he passed, and it is tremendous. If you're a fan of like legal dramas, things like A Few Good Men, stuff like that, I think this movie stands right up next to him. And so it's not comedy. You know, Jake Lacy's really good at comedy, but he's not particularly funny in that movie, but he's also very good in it. So I just wanted to shout that out. It's good.
Joe Manganiello is in this movie, Andrew, and it is one of my favorite little bits that the movie does. Because we have this whole tactical SWAT team that's brought in by this company. They're like guns for hire, like mercenaries that they bring in to take out these monsters so they can keep everything under wraps. And they quickly sedate the gorilla. They move on to the wolf and they shoot it. They think it's sedated. They land on the ground. They land their helicopter. And one by one, this man's team gets picked off. But it's led by this face that we recognize, this relatively high-profile actor. And he just gets eaten. And that's it. And that wraps up their story minutes after it began. And I thought that was a pretty fun swerve. So kudos to... If there's any person... You know, we talked about all these characters, you know, playing this really straight and how that seems like an odd choice with the tone of the movie as a whole. But if there's any character you want to play it as straight as possible, it's Joe Manganiello here. And he's even got like the scar to make him look really tough and badass. But I think that whole little joke is one of the best things this movie does.
Yeah, I think so. I think his character is like pretty close on the line though. Like he's like serious, but it's almost to the point of like self-awareness. Like he's so tough. You're just kind of like, yeah, this guy knows. This is the guy that revs his car at 3 a.m. down the street because he wants you to know how tough he is. But he's right on the line though. Like he definitely is taking it very seriously, but there's definitely hints from like if he'd survived this whole movie, I feel like he would have been more on the Jeffrey Dean Morgan side than the Rock side. But yeah, I was actually kind of shocked when he died. I was like, really? That's it? Like, there's not a whole lot for this guy either, so.
And that pretty much covers our main cast, Andrew, but I gotta shout out Will Yoon Lee, who shows up as Agent Park. Pretty brief role.
One scene,
he is,
yeah.
in the FBI, they kind of look into this company, then they get shooed away. A few things here. He's Agent Park. And currently on The Good Doctor, which I think is actually wrapping up his last season, he plays Dr. Park. He's got the same name. I don't know. I thought that was fun. But I just love this guy. He's a beautiful man. He's a cool martial artist and a great actor. Alum of the show. We talked about him on Elektra. And I think, Andrew, I think I might have given him my Mark Strong Award. But obviously, there's just no way to check. There's no way to know. But possible Mark Strong Award winner in our midst here. Gotta always shout out William Lee.
Did we do Die Another Day?
No, we did the Die Another. No.
Yes, we did. We did the Pierce Brosnan James Bond was Die Another Day, right?
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Sure, Andrew.
And he's in that too.
Is he?
Yes. Great. He plays the original persona that Toby Stevens turns himself into. That totally non-problematic plot point of the Asian colonel that turns himself into a white man.
Well, I probably gave the same spiel back on that episode, but I'm going to do it every time he shows up because I love this guy.
Well, yeah, I was looking. I was like, Die Another Day. I was like, is that the one we did? Yeah, I was pretty sure it was. But yeah, Elektra for sure. It's also in The Wolverine.
Another day.
I hate that. Like, lives in my brain rent free. Like, I'll be like walking down the street and I'll just have like her weird auto tune Die Another Day, like shivers up my spine, and I'm just like, ah. Yeah, I mean, he was also in The Wolverine. It's pretty cool there. He's got a lot of cool, he's done a lot of cool stuff. It turns out.
All right, Andrew, I think it's time we talk about the scenes of this film. Specifically our favorites, the best scenes of the movie. So, Andrew, in your opinion, when is this movie firing on all cylinders? What is the best scene in Rampage?
I am going to be going with just our finale. It feels like the best. It's, you know, it's when the kind of the promise of all these monsters fighting kind of finally comes to pass. And you kind of get this. They've all kind of been driven into the city of Chicago. This was shot in Chicago as well, this is where we basically get The Rock and George versus what are the other animals called? I forget.
Ralph. They specifically say in the movie, and if memory serves correctly, the crocodile is Lizzie.
Lizzie, yes.
I think they ever said it.
So anyway, it's Davis Okoye and George versus. Might as well use the man's full Christian name, but. Davis Okoye and George versus Lizzie and Ralph. This is where we are revealed where I believe it's in the trailers where the wolf flies around and the line by the rock of course the wolf flies, like that was in the trailers. This is just pretty cool. Like they're obviously it's just giant animal carnage, just giant animals beating stuff up, dropping it all down. And this is, yeah, if you're in a movie with giant animals, this is kind of what you pay for. And so we finally get there and it is. Pretty cool. The animals are all dispatched of in various ways, including Lizzie ultimately taking out Ralph herself. And yeah,
by it's pretty biting cool. his head off. Pretty gnarly.
And that'll do it. That'll do it.
So just to recap, your favorite scene is the last 30 minutes of this film, Andrew?
Yeah.
Okay. Good pick. A lot to talk about here. I was reminded a bit once they start fighting each other, which somehow I didn't see coming until like they cured George of his aggressiveness. I'm like, oh, okay, George is going to be the protector. That makes sense. This is a cool way to take it. I was reminded a bit of Godzilla 2014, so much so that I was expecting George to rip Lizzie's jaw like in half. I was certain that's the way they were going to kill him. And then instead he does the big spike through the eyeball, which is also cool and pretty effective. I like seeing all the different abilities these things have. Like the wolf, you know, talks about it's able to fly, like a little sugar glider, which was pretty cool. And also has like quills that come out of his back and its tail. It shoots him at a helicopter at one point, which was just fun. I mean, I agree. This... My favorite scene, I was going to dial in a little bit more specifically. I like whenever the skyscraper falls over when they're on top of it in the broken helicopter and that whole thing comes down. I thought that was just a really cool set piece. But I'm having fun the entire destruction scenes. It is, as you said, why we bought the ticket, why we had the popcorn, why we're watching this movie. And it delivers. Like, this is the one thing this movie has to deliver on. These yeah. monsters destroying a city.
My city.
Your city. this the body count in this movie is insane, by the way. I don't know when.
It's so casual, too. Like, it's so
casual.
Insanely casual. Like,
they just flip buses full of people. They hit people through the air. They throw them off buildings. Like, which it's fine, I guess. But it's just weird, like... This is a PG-13 film, and you see a body ripped in two pieces.
No blood.
There's bloody stumps. I mean, there's a severed hand floating in zero G gravity in the beginning of this movie. Like, there's not blood squirts, but there's blood. There's red. It's extremely violent, is all I'm saying. But there's no boobs and no F word, so it's PG-13. It's a weird world we live in, Andrew. But I'm having fun in the finale. So yeah, I gotta agree with you. I mean, I would be very shocked if anybody watched this movie and this wasn't their favorite scene. This is what we all signed up for, and for my money, the movie delivers. And I think it looks pretty good. I mean, just from like a technical standpoint, especially like the early scenes of this movie where they're just normal gorillas, but you know, they're CG gorillas. That I wasn't ever taken out of it. I didn't see anything too janky.
Yeah.
This is like on par with the latest Planet of the Apes movies. I mean, I think it's really good looking stuff, solid stuff here.
I agree. That's why I picked it.
It's good. It's good. It's fun. There's a, you know, we talk about the destruction in the finale. There's also some more, there's like people stories here. We talked about our villain getting killed. She gets thrown up into the air and George eats her, which is kind of weird. Yep. I know George ate people now, but he eats her. But her brother is trying to run out of the building. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character stops him in the lobby. He's like, you just ran down, I don't know, whatever, it was 78 flights of stairs. Saves me the trouble of running up. And he's like, if you just give me that laptop, I'll let you run out of here free. And he's like, really? Oh, it was my sister's idea anyway. And he gives it to him. And you know what's going to happen, Andrew. As soon as he runs out those front doors, giant piece of the building falls on him. Blood does splatter here, by the way. Blood splatters on the doors when it lands on him. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan's like, ooh. And again, it's a very violent thing, played for a laugh, weird tone this movie has, but a fun death, if I may say so.
Yeah, but he deserved it. That's why it's okay.
Okay.
It's like True Lies. You ever seen True Lies?
I still have not. I think it's
streaming. You know the premise of True Lies. But,
can I guess? I don't know. Can I guess?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I know Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis are like romantic.
Yes.
Is Arnold like a secret agent, but she doesn't know, she's part of his cover, and then she finds out?
Yes. Yes.
Hey.
It's not that she's not actually his wife, it's just that she doesn't know what he does, basically.
Got it.
There's a part later in the movie where, spoilers, she does find out, because that's definitely not going to be a plot point in the movie. But she asks him at one point, she's like, have you ever killed anyone? And he's got this like truth serum in him, and he's sitting there all dazed out, and he's like, yeah, but they were all bad. Like, so anytime something like that happens, that's in my head, I'm like, yeah, but they were all bad. George kills people, but they're all bad. Except for the innocents. And you know, man, there's that scene where the wolf shows up and like they get the signal that sends them all to Chicago. He's just like chowing down on a bus full of people. Like, it's kind of messed brutal. Up. Like, it's really weird. Like, it's genuinely a strange movie. You're not kidding. Like
whenever the alligator first arrives, when it comes out of the water, it literally flips this ferry carrying dozens of people, and they get tossed to the side. Lots of them are dead. And The Rock's watching it and goes, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, you're not wrong, Rock. I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life, but like, you could have done something a little different there.
But there is one death that it kind of makes you feel it. It's the bizarre is not the right word. The unexpected way this movie opens on a space station that. Has something's gone horribly awry. Everything's on fire when the movie opens. We have one survivor left. There's, like I mentioned earlier, body parts just floating around. Everyone's else has been killed. This astronaut gets the escape hatch. She's asking headquarters to let her out because for whatever reason they have control over it. And they say, no, we're not going to let you out unless you save the research. So she has to go back, get this box of, you know, the chemical, the weapons. Get back to the escape hatch, and we see there's this creature on board trying to kill her. And it, like, breaks the window on the escape hatch before she escapes. And then whenever it looks like she's a safe distance away from the space station that's exploding, the window fully cracks and she dies and it blows up. And it's, it's kind of brutal. We watch this person like try to narrowly escape death, and we see them like realize they're about to die, and the music gets real dramatic, and that's how we start the movie. We're introduced to this desperate character who meets their violent death in space. Man,
yeah, I was like, all right, nice little like rock movie. Got some giant monsters. Gonna be all good. Nothing too heavy. Nothing too sad. Oh no.
And then in the same movie, Andrew, in the bad guy's headquarters, where they're like watching everything unfold on screens throughout the movie, they have the Rampage arcade cabinet in their office. Did you see that? What are the odds that in this movie, the three creatures that evolve are the three creatures from the video game they have in their office? I can't believe
they didn't notice.
This would be a fun thing to track as we go through inevitably dozens of video game adaptations, because I know in the movie Double Dragon, there is a Double Dragon cabinet in that movie, and I wonder how often these video game movies sneak that in, the actual game inside the movie.
We should have done Prince of Persia. That would have been real funny.
Is the video game appear in that movie?
It would be funny if it did.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that it does.
PlayStation in the background.
Just a PlayStation in the background of this, you know, period piece set in ancient Persia. And there's a video game there randomly.
The funny thing about space is that, you know, there's no way to make it not look like a special effect. But
yeah,
because like we can never, will likely never experience that in real life. So I've seen video of it, you know, from spaceships, and I've seen it in movies, and like looks unreal as far as I know. Maybe they've all been filmed. Maybe they've all been fiction, Andrew. Who knows? Who can really tell for sure?
I'm not saying it's not real, folks. I'm having a laugh. We went to space
once.
It's a thing. At least once. That would be Andrew, the funny part. It's like, I'm not saying all the moon landings were faked. I'm saying some of them were faked.
Andrew, I'm curious if you have the same note here. Here's my note. I should read what I wrote down. Parachute camera is a weird angle on the rock.
It's a weird angle on everyone. It looked fake.
Yeah, he looks so weird. I literally thought...
Even Jeffrey Dean Morgan looked a little weird. Like,
yeah, 100%. I thought they had a shot of a stunt double by mistake for a while. Maybe, that's the Rock. Like, I'm curious if they actually went skydiving, and so like they had a camera strapped to his chest, and that's why this unflattering angle. Or
yeah,
it was an interesting choice, but they look very weird in that scene. I just wanted you to validate that I wasn't crazy for thinking that.
It's extremely weird. I 100% agree. It was like they showed that, and I was like, I hate this. I never want to see this again.
a little runner that they have in this movie that I really enjoyed was Kate Caldwell, Naomi Harris's character. She's alongside The Rock for most of this movie, and she is regularly calling him out on his dumb masculine BS. Like when him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan first come face to face, he's like, we could settle this, or you could just keep being acting like tough guys with each other. And then, he smarts off to him, and The Rock is like, why don't you take these cuffs off and I'll show you what a real man I am, whatever the line is. And they just haul him into the airplane. She's like, God, I can't believe he didn't just take your cuffs off. I liked her just cutting him down on his, dumb shtick.
I agree. She mentions at one point that she's got a PhD in calling people out on their stuff. And yeah, you know, especially in a movie with The Rock where it feels like people don't tend to do that, I'm always into it.
It's good. It's the one, you know, we talked about Jumanji. I think one reason that works so well is subverting the tropes we've come to know. This kind of does it a little bit in its own way. Andrew, I don't know about you, but I like the animals destroying the city, right? There's some character moments I like. I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan. What else is there to say about this movie good or bad. That's all this movie is. It delivers. I didn't check the runtime. It doesn't feel like it overstays it. Didn't feel 2 hours plus. I feel like they kept it maybe under 100 minutes, which I think is the right call for this type of movie. It's a summer popcorn blockbuster. If you enjoyed it, I don't think you're crazy for enjoying it. If this isn't your favorite movie, I get it. I mean, it's so not challenging in that way. And like, I don't even mean that as an insult, because I don't think they were shooting for some kind of high art. I think they nailed exactly what they were going for. And look, I like seeing the big CG monsters destroy the buildings. I'll just say it.
I agree. I think this movie is delivering on exactly what it says it will, and your enjoyment will come from there.
Also, stealth bombers are really cool.
Have I ever told you the Sum of All Fears Tom Clancy stealth bomber story?
I don't believe so.
All right, I'm going to tell it to you. So,
regale us.
So back in the day, stunt commentaries used to be a thing where, like, you know, I mean, commentaries have always been a thing where, like, they bring like a cast and like a crew together to do a commentary for a movie on like a DVD. It's one of the, you know, they don't really do those anymore. They do them occasionally, but you have to get the discs to get them, which is why people still prefer physical media. But also, like, a lot of older movies have commentary tracks that, like, they don't always transfer over to new ones. But anyway, they would occasionally do like weird ones. Like, I mean, obviously the Ben Affleck Armageddon one is pretty well known, as far as like Michael Bay's not on it and Ben Affleck's kind of stomping all over Michael Bay and sharing stories of when Michael Bay's telling him to shut up for messing with the movie and stuff like that. And it's probably the most likable Ben Affleck's ever been in like any scenario his entire life. But there was a point where, speaking of Ben Affleck, they made a movie based off a Jack Ryan, Tom Clancy novel called The Sum of All Fears. They'd made a few to that point, The Hunt for the Red October with Alec Baldwin, and then they did Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford. Willem Dafoe was in one of those two, I think, playing John Clark.
You always say The Hunt for the Red October, and Andrew, I think you're adding an extra "the" in there.
Am I?
Let's find out.
I have this book. Where is it?
I can confirm the movie is The Hunt for Red October.
So is the book. Good for you. You were paying attention. You passed. Anyway.
Now that
After the Harrison Ford movies end, they decide to do a reboot with Ben Affleck as Jack Ryan. And they're going to adapt this time The Sum of All Fears. Now, all four of these are Jack Ryan books to this point. Jack Ryan is a kind of more of a government analyst thrust into agent work. There's a show on Amazon with John Krasinski. That's the general gist of it. He starts off as kind of an analyst in an office and gets kind of sucked into everything. As the books go on, he eventually goes on to become the president, and his son becomes a character too. A lot of stuff like that. So much so that Air Force One is basically also a Jack Ryan movie, if you really think about it. But anyway, they make a movie with Ben Affleck as Jack Ryan called The Sum of All Fears, and it's not particularly well received. But one of the things they do is they record a commentary track for the movie with the director and Tom Clancy. Like, Tom Clancy himself. Notorious, you know, expert on all of the things within his books, comes in to do a commentary for this very poor adaptation of his book. It goes even worse than you might have expected it to. It is first off, deeply entertaining for just how little Tom Clancy cares about making any kind of point praising the movie. Like, at one point, like, throughout several times in that commentary track, he goes, "This is nonsense, by the way. You know that, right? Like, that's not how this works." Like, he just calls out the movie for, like, its dumb, faulty logic on stuff. But it culminates in this moment where they're in, like, a war room, and one of the guys puts down the phone. He's like, "Sir, they've launched the stealth bombers." And it cuts over to this field, and you see the stealth bombers launching up. And he goes, "This is BS, by the way. You know that, right?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "They're stealth bombers, man. It's like, how would you know they just took off?" And he's like, "Well, don't they have radar?" And he's like, "Do you understand what the concept of stealth is?" Like, he's just, like, completely shredding this to pieces about how they literally have a movie where a guy goes, "They're stealth bombers, just, they're acting like they could tell when stealth bombers take off." And Tom Clancy is like, you can just hear in his voice that he's like, "I hate all of you. If it weren't for the giant check I got for this movie, I'd hate you even more." But He just, like, so it's, I don't know that it's on any modern version of Sum of All Fears, but it's almost worth seeking out just because Tom Clancy making fun, not even making fun of, like, he's not doing it because he thinks it's funny. He's doing it because he's like, this is all wrong. Like, he's just fact-checking the terrible adaptation of his book the whole time. But I will always remember him basically being like, what do you think stealth means? Like, what do you think stealth actually does? And chef's kiss.
Video game month two is in full swing. We got one down. Next week, we will be taking a second look at Resident Evil. The, what was that, 2000, 2001? The first Mila Jovovich film that launched a huge franchise. Who would have saw that coming? But we're going back to that first one, taking a second look. Andrew, have you seen that one?
Nope.
Or have you played the games? Are you a fan nope. of the game? None of the Resident Evils? Not even Resident nope. Evil 4?
I have one of the remakes on my thing. I just haven't done it yet.
Oh, probably two, right? Because I think I've told you it's like one two. Of my favorite games of all time. Oh, you got it.
Yeah,
you got to fire that bad boy up. I love the video games. I have seen some of the movies. I've seen this first one. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting revisit, but that is next week. For now, it's time for our question of the week. And if you want to leave us a question for a future episode, you can do just that. Just hop into our Discord. There is a link to our server right there in the show notes. What are you waiting for? Come and join us. Drop us a cue, just like that guy in Doom who says, recently saw on some social media that we should stop remaking well-received movies and start remaking poorly received movies. I absolutely agree, and I feel the statement is right up y'all's wheelhouse. What is a movie that was so poorly received it iced a potential franchise you think deserves another shot?
All right, so there's a lot to unpack here. Definitely not my brother. The biggest problem with the what I feel is the kind of home statement here of we should remake poorly received movies is that the reason they remake successful movies is because they believe it will be profitable. The inherent disadvantage of remaking a poorly received movie or a flop is that the only conceived notion anybody has of it is that other version which sucked. So from a profitability slash money making perspective, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that. It's not saying you can't. It's just that that's why it doesn't happen. And it's also why they do remake quote unquote good movies. It's because they make money. And, you know, you want to have that stop happening, stop going to see them. So it's, I don't inherently disagree with the concept. I think there are movies that were poorly received that have the potential to be better. But as far as why that doesn't happen, it's a fairly logical chain of events. You didn't ask that, but I'm telling you anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I see where the sentiment is coming from. But yeah. Also, just looking at the first half, we should stop remaking well-received movies. I get there's a lot of remakes that people don't like, and they say, why touch it? The original was so good. But I like a lot of remakes. And I like the original and I like the new one. I think horror genre in particular is pretty good with its remakes. And as you and I have said many times before, when you remake a movie, you don't lose that original. So whether the new one is great or bad, the original is good. You've still got the original there. So I don't think we should actually stop remaking bad ones, but the idea of remaking a movie that was poorly received, I mean, let's take the business side out of it, because you're right. Why would studios do that? It failed the first time. Why would they try it again? Unless they're like adapting a book again. We see that happen a lot.
We do see that happen a lot, admittedly. That's actually a good example. Something like The Golden Compass is based off a whole series of books. That first movie was really, really bad. Obviously, it was meant to be a franchise. The fans of those books really liked it. It did get a second shot as like a limited edition television series on HBO. Pretty well liked. So books, I think, is definitely a like sterling example of this concept of like a poor adaptation can absolutely lead to a readaptation later.
Now, this second part, I feel like, is a whole new question here. You kind of snuck two questions in on us, that guy in Doom. What's a movie that was so poorly received it iced a potential franchise you think deserves another shot? Because, like, the first thing that comes to mind for me is Alita Battle Angel. I loved that movie. I think it's fantastic. It was clearly setting up a franchise. Definitely a direct sequel. Ends kind of on a cliffhanger. And we're likely never going to see that second movie. Because that first one just wasn't super profitable. It wasn't a bomb, but it wasn't enough to give people, the studios, a lot of confidence to make another one. So, but like, I don't want to see that first one made again. I just want to see a sequel. I think where we started is just fine. I just want another movie that I know is never going to happen. And then Kung Pao Into the Fist is my other answer, where I wish there was a sequel to that, and it never happened because the first one didn't make money.
Doesn't the guy who made that threaten to do a new one every other year or so?
He talks about it all the time, but I don't think it's happening. But
The one I always go to, I mentioned it before this, it doesn't really fit, but obviously stuff like The Nice Guys. Like, I wish there were 17 Nice 100%. Guys movies by this point. Like, I love that movie. It was super well received, admittedly. Like, I have no questions admitting that, like, it got really good reviews. But it made $63 million off a $50 million budget. And that's, first off, $50 million is a lot for a movie like that. But even if it, you know, if it had hit the golden $30 million, it would have been profitable. And maybe I'd have another one. But it is a, like, there's a lot of stuff like that where, you know, I would have loved a franchise based off of a wholly original concept, which is just not something that happens. You get it occasionally. Even on a base level, Fast and the Furious was a quote unquote original concept, even though the first movie is just a remake of Point Break. But it is a tough thing once something doesn't make money. It gets seen as not successful. And it becomes really difficult to quantify, you know, going back to that. And, you know, but at the same time, it's like, it looks something like The Crow. Like, there's one successful Crow movie, and yet there's been like three or four sequels, and they've been trying to do this remake for like 20 years. Like, it's been going on forever. Something like Highlander is the same way for me. Like, Highlander, like, you've been hearing about a Highlander remake for like decades, full on. And I think maybe Henry Cavill and David Leitch are finally doing Highlander, but like, there's one good Highlander movie. There's like one good movie, and then there's a bunch of sequels, and then there is the show, which has a decent cult following. It is a little insane that like something like Highlander or The Crow gets so narrowly like laser focused by these studios. Is like, there's more to do there, even though they arguably ran it into the ground by continually trying to do it. So it's a strange conversation. It's very weird.
Well, The Crow, I mean, even though it's most well-known for that Brandon Lee movie, it is based on a comic book, so that's another example of trying to re-adapt something. But that one's, and this is really off-base from what the question was, but that is one remake, you know, it's a re-adaptation, but come on, it's a remake, where I do feel a little like, why? Just because that first one is so Brandon Lee's movie. For an easy comparison, it'd be like, you know, making a modern Enter the Dragon. Like, why would you even do that when there's no way it lives up to the legacy? But you know what, this new Crow could be awesome, and I could be eating crow, Andrew. I agree, a Nice Guy sequel would be great, even a streaming series or something, but the best we can hope for at this point is just a spiritual successor in the potential Two Dicks trilogy. Will it into existence. John Hamm, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, bring them together. Get Shane Black on it. Let's make it happen. Start a campaign and let us know what your answer is. Do you want to see a poorly received movie get remade? Could that be a recipe for success? And what's a franchise that was killed too early? Let us know. Hit us up on social media or in that Discord. Come and join us. What are you waiting for? And come back next week for Resident Evil. And until then, just remember that maybe not every movie is great,
but all movies have greatness.
Thank you to Mark Benavides for singing our theme song. You can follow him on Instagram at NotThatMarkAnthony. And thanks to Mitch for the music. Check him out on Twitter at I'mTheBiggieBoy. And check our show notes for the SoundCloud link. Check out our store on TeePublic for some Best of the Rest merch. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. That is the only way that we grow. And follow us on social media at BOTRcast. Thank you.
If there's not two dicks on my screen, I don't want it.